Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 1027.
Well, it's just gone 27 to 7 here on Classic 1027. As all the sevens line up, we're going to talk SMEs on the panel. So let's hope we get lucky. It's sponsored by Yellow Pages. Don't search, find. Now, let's face it, SMEs are the lifeblood of this country's economy. In fact, any country's economy. And we really need to stop paying lip service to the fact and truly acknowledge how to better support the men and women who bravely venture out on their own. And also on how we can encourage new entrants into the world of entrepreneurship. I love the approach of Sheryl Sandberg. She's the chief operating officer of Facebook, who says that if you're offered a seat on a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on. And we need to inspire a generation of entrepreneurial space travelers. But one does get the sense that government, specifically the Small Business Development Department, is still trying to redesign the ox wagon here. So all this week, we're going to ask, how do we make it better? We're going to profile the risk takers and the rocket ship ticket holders and take you on a journey into the SME ecosystem, where, in spite of government, largely South Africans are exploring where here be dragons are, as that old saying goes. It's all about SMEs on the panel, sponsored by Yellow Pages. Yellow Pages has a range of digital marketing solutions to help you grow your business. Yellow Pages, don't search, find.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
If you ask any entrepreneur, from the mom and pop down the street to the aggressive expansionary startup, what their list of top three challenges is, and I'll stick my neck out to say that cash flow and late payments has got to be in that top three. Getting customers to pay on time is one of the biggest challenges for business owners, and when the problem persists for too long, it'll ultimately lead to either a shutdown of that business or other suppliers being affected in a domino fashion. And for any business, the amount of money flowing in or out is clearly critical to its success. Cash flow, when money is tight, paying the bills can get challenging. But when cash is plentiful, we know that businesses can invest, they can expand, they can buy new equipment, they can hire staff, they can retain other staff. It really has a knock-on all throughout the supply chain. So let's introduce tonight's guests around the table, starting with Toby Chance, the DA Shadow Minister for Small Business Development, who is championing quite an interesting piece of legislation through the House. Evening, Toby, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Michael.
And on the line, we've got Mike Anderson, the founder and CEO of the National Small Business Chamber, the NSBC, which is also doing its best to ensure that small businesses are paid promptly. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Michael, very grateful. Always good to be back. Thank you very much.
Now, Toby, you're currently in a parliamentary recess, which means I can chat to you face to face and not have to call you down in
Yes, it makes
Cape
a change. It's nice
now,
to be here.
You've introduced a bill to tackle this, but let's actually start with the size of the problem in the public sector in particular. And we've seen Minister in the Presidency, Jeff Khadebe. He's hosted community radio phone-in programs. The last one that I got to listen to was in August last year, and he was inundated by callers saying, government, your government doesn't pay on time. Just how big is the problem of late payment?
It's huge, and it's not getting any better. So just to give you some numbers, I put in questions to ministers last year to find out what their age analysis is. In other words, how many suppliers haven't been paid and over what period have they not been paid? And the answers that we got as of mid-December was nearly 8 billion rand worth of unpaid suppliers, unpaid invoices, of which over 2 billion rand was 180 days older or more. So that means that some businesses had not been paid for 6 months. And when a business hasn't been paid for 6 months, you know, you really are struggling to stay alive, particularly as many of these suppliers have government as their principal, you know, customers, which means that they don't have any sort of other customers to fall back on. Now, if you look at, that's just national government and SOEs. If you look at the provincial government, I mean, the Department of Health alone at the provincial level owes 15 billion rand. So it's a killer. So small businesses are battling.
If you look at which departments are the biggest culprits here, we know health at a provincial level seems to be in a terminal state of decline, much to the strong denials of some in the public health sector. It's almost daily that we have horror stories of rats in hospitals, of conditions that most people wouldn't work in, let alone in the hygienic public health sector. Which departments are the biggest culprits?
Public works is probably the biggest, because of course they have a huge procurement process, you know, because they look after all the government buildings and government land, and so they do a lot of maintenance. And many of their suppliers are small businesses, so that's a real offender. Donnell has been in the news recently, and my colleague Muzi Mainani and I went off to Donnell a few weeks ago when I launched this bill, because they owe something like 800 billion rand in 800 million rand in unpaid invoices. And we were approached by one of their suppliers who had to close shop. I mean, 38 staff on the street, because he couldn't handle the cash flow crisis that non-payment had caused. So, I mean, it's across the board. You know, over 35 departments reported back their unpaid invoices, and it's just a huge number, and it's not getting any better.
And Mike, the problem here is, from a policy level, we've got a government who wants to, which wants to use its procurement muscle to stimulate the growth of SMEs. Yet it's the very same government that is struggling to pay those SMEs once it transacts with them. If we look at some of the reasons given by government departments for late payments, where is the problem primarily? Is it the fact that we're seeing service providers submitting invoices late? Do they not submit the correct information on these invoices? Is there corruption? What are some of the reasons given by departments for late payments?
Bad admin. Mike or...
I just wanted to bring Mike
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Toby,
go for
we
it,
can
Mike.
Bounce it back to you. Yeah?
You know, Michael, as you alluded earlier, you know, the big problem is that you mentioned, I think the foundation is that small business is the mainstay of our economy. It's the future of job creation. Two-thirds of our nation work in a small business. And, of course, small business is where it is going to happen in the future. We need to all collectively get together and alleviate unemployment and drive job creation. And if you look at the Prompt Payment Act, which we brought in, and I'm very grateful that Toby Chance and we've had engagement over the past 2 years and to really get this into mainstream, because at the end of the day, the most meaningful thing that anyone can do in big business government is to pay small businesses on time. Let's all remember that when a small business goes out of business, a family goes out of business, children don't go to school. So we need a collective responsibility from the consumer to small business to business and government to really drive this initiative. And, of course, we see it from our side as a National Small Business Chamber. We have 127,000 small businesses who are members of the organization. Of course, we have big business who behind us. We have government agencies. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of window dressing, and this is our problem, is that over the last 10, 15 years, there's been a great deal intention, but little action, and this is where we're at.
That said, though, just from the perspective of your members, when we look at some of the problems, I have had it put to me that a lot of these SMEs that are service providers to government aren't adhering to the requirements of proper invoicing, and it's as much as a supply issue as it is a problem with the way government is handling its affairs.
Michael, you know, thank you for that. But I think at the end of the day, you know, let's understand the dynamic of a small business. The dynamic of a small business is that generally they provide an enormous service. They're passionate, they're talented, and they deliver quickly and on time. This is our experience. If, for example, a small business doesn't follow the right procurement procedures or necessary vendor procedures, it's also up to the big business or government agencies to educate them on how to follow these procedures. But what is happening is that we see it is that the vendor application is done, the procedures are done, the invoice is done, and 3 or 4 months later, it comes back that there's an error in the postal code, or there's an error in the whatever it may be. And the excuses are plentiful. And, you know, I just think that we have a collective responsibility to speed up the process. Yes, the prompt payment code and, of course, engineering the faster payment of big business and government to small business suppliers is there. But also, we do agree that it's up to also the small business and the small business owner to ensure that that the invoicing details are correct and those things are in place. But I think that there's a lot of excuses in place. And at the end of the day, if you think about it, Michael, that the small business cannot go the legal distance. You know, and I had a case this morning where a lovely young family is going out of business. They're losing their house. They're losing their cars. Their children aren't going to school. They've waited 275 days for an invoice paid on the service well driven. And there was a few problems with the invoice. But there's co-education here, you know, and I think that's where the scary part lies.
That is where the rubber hits the road, Toby, because one needs to be mindful of the fact that there is an inordinate amount of corruption in the public sector. So a lot of the regulations, purchase orders, ensuring that you've complied are there for a reason, to ensure that we try and at least eradicate corruption. So how do we get on top of this problem?
Well, I think that the gatekeeping factor is a problem. The corruption, you often find people in the procurement department and in the financial department, you know, demand a cut, you know, so that you get your payment on time if you pay me X. So that's obviously totally unacceptable. One must also bear in mind that the Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, which govern everything to do with procurement at government level, stipulate that payments must be made within 30 days of an approved invoice being received. So what we must do is we must actually put pressure on the Treasury to follow up on the then Minister for Finance, Gigaba's promise that government officials and accounting officers would be found guilty of misconduct if they are found to be not paying their suppliers on time. And I think that this is something that I'm going to be taking up in Parliament. As you said, we are in recess, but it's something that I will be putting pressure on the Minister of Finance and the President, because the President himself, in his State of the Nation address in February, made mention of the need to pay suppliers on time. So it's a huge issue, and we mustn't also forget that the private sector is not blameless here. Big businesses, and particularly people sitting in comfy offices, you know, who don't have to pay the salaries at the end of the month, don't actually understand the dynamics, as Mike was saying, of what it takes to run a small business. And there really must be a much greater consciousness and awareness of the absolute need to develop cash flow consciousness across the economy so that these businesses can grow. I mean, if you imagine how much money is tied up in government and big business, you know, bank accounts, when if that money was actually circulating in the economy and being used to pay suppliers who could then buy more stock, grow their business. When small businesses talk about access to finance, they're often referring to working capital, not investment capital.
Exactly, the finance that they're owed in any event. And you talk about the private sector. The construction sector is one example where a contractor may be paid and then it takes sometimes months for subcontractors to be paid. And that's a dispute between two private sector participants or entities there. Now, you've introduced a private members bill, which, let's face it, I don't think we've seen a private members bill be accepted in Democratic South Africa, but this should unite political parties across the political spectrum. The fact that we can all agree the small businesses are the engine of economic growth. We are currently in an economy that is not creating jobs, that is desperate to ensure that we can support SMEs. And so the rationale is almost indisputable. What's the main objective of the bill?
The bill is called the Small Enterprise Ombuds Service Bill, which means that it would establish an ombudsman for small enterprises. And an ombudsman essentially is an alternative dispute resolution mechanism, which it stops short of having to go to the courts and have lots of legal representation, which costs money, takes time, and is unwieldy. So if this bill is passed, an ombudsman would be established with provincial offices, and any small business that has a dispute of any nature, not necessarily just payments, it could be a contractual dispute, it could be a dispute over intellectual property or anything that is prejudicing that small business, can lay a complaint at the ombudsman office or through the online channels which will be set up as part of this. And it will result in swift justice hopefully being served without the right of appeal, and except on a point of law. So this is very important, because it'll mean that the big companies or government can't string along small guys forever and ever and ever, knowing that they can't afford to carry on. And obviously the due process will be followed. We're not trying to get out of legal process at all. We're just trying to speed the process up and allow small businesses access to swift and cheap justice.
And Mike, what do you make of the suggestion or the proposal to introduce an ombudsman? It certainly has international precedent. We see it in the US and other jurisdictions as well. The US has a Small Business Administration Office of the National Ombudsman. It does look like an idea that has seen its time arrive here in South Africa, because for years now, we've had government promises, hotlines and the like, that we're going to get on top of the late payments issue, and nothing still. I mean, businesses are continually, when I chat to them, throw up their hands, shrug their shoulders and say government just doesn't seem to be committed here.
100%. You know, you alluded to the fact that the global economies and around the world have embraced the small business independent bodies, and Toby's suggestion and his initiative is exciting to Small Business Africa, quite simply is because, as we know, that small business cannot get a legal distance. It's as simple as that. If you think about it, government and business don't have to pay small business, and a small business can do nothing about that. So an independent body which holds it and stays with that would certainly alleviate the pressures and the need to speed up not just payment process, but issues around the payment process would certainly be a welcome fact in Small Business Africa.
Toby, issues to consider here for policymakers. What would an ombudsman of this nature or of this kind look like? What sort of beast are we talking about here? Chapter 9, how would it be administered?
No, not a Chapter 9, but it would be a statutory body. In other words, it would be established through an Act of Parliament, which means that it's not a voluntary body, unlike some of the industry associations that are established. For example, the Press Ombudsman has been set up by the press industry. So this is a statutory body which has the force of law, and decisions are made depending on the size of the quantum, or the quantum of the award or whatever it is, would be equivalent to a magistrate's court or a high court decision, and the sheriff of the court would have the power to enforce the decision. So this is a body with teeth. There's no point in having something like this that just makes recommendations. It has to have the power to actually enforce its decisions, hence those provisions have been made in the bill. But I think it's important to say that this is the last resort. We want to improve the processes and the procedures that are followed by companies and government in issuing orders and managing the entire order processing from end to end. So one of the things that we're going to try and get the Treasury to understand is to expand their central suppliers database so that it can track orders as well as invoices and payment of those invoices, and then even go to the extent of making government departments liable for the tax penalties that small businesses have to pay because they themselves haven't been paid by government. Do you see what I'm saying?
We need to start linking all of this together. It needs to be part of the key performance indicators.
Absolutely.
For financial officers in government.
Absolutely.
So we can measure and actually have consequences for non-performance.
There have to be consequences. And then on the private sector side, we need to expect companies, starting with listed companies, to report in their annual reports and their statements that this is their age analysis. This is how long it takes them to pay their suppliers, so that they can actually show, are they going along with the code that Mike's promoting, or are they just ignoring it? And then there's a naming and shaming process. You know, companies don't want to do business with companies that don't pay. And we need to be prepared to keep these guys' feet to the fire to make sure that there's pain if they're not actually playing the game properly.
We have a great example in Bell Pottinger of what happens once you fall foul of of an industry body that may not necessarily be a legally enforceable issue, but the reputational damage is severe. And Mike, that's really what the NSPC is trying to do with the prompt payment code, which isn't legally enforceable. But what you're trying to do here is to hold big business to account. What sort of success have you had with the prompt payment code to this point?
Michael, yes, we launched it some time back, and of course it's not unique globally. It's in the UK and in Germany and Chile and a number of countries in the world. And initially it was a slow takeoff, and of course it became exponential after a while. And in some economies, that some big companies, listed companies, refuse to sign the code, and the big backing of the code is of course people like yourself, Michael, the media and social media, and because at the end of the day, we have to understand that a small business wants to support big business, government to support them. So the natural effect really of the prompt payment code around the world has been the media and social media. And you know, on an independent website which we drive, the promptpaymentcode.org.za, you will see a number of the major brands that are now signing the code. And I'll tell you one thing: what's really important is that there's very little poor intention amongst CEOs around the country. What's happened is, Michael, is that for many, many years they've inherited very poor procurement policies. And they've never really understood these wonderful people at the top, the consequence in the private sector when a small business doesn't get paid. And we've seen over the last year some of the major brands globally have changed all their policies to be able to sign the prompt payment code. And not about signing, it's about committing to paying small businesses on time. So we've seen a massive change very quickly in the intention to really support that. Because as I mentioned earlier, the most meaningful thing that you and I can do in big business and government is to support and pay small business on time.
There are other alternatives as well here, innovations in the market, Mike. Things like supply chain finance, which is also known as 100%. Reverse factoring. So we've got the option here of bringing in financiers to help provide some bridging finance.
You know, thank you for saying that, Michael. You know, about 3 years ago, when we did our initial surveys on access to funding, the biggest source of funding was startup finance, and really it stuck to that. But if you look at now, the most important aspect about funding is bridging finance. And a lot of, you know, we're dealing with a lot of our corporate partners right now, and those who really intend to make a positive difference in the framework of corporate to SME supply chains is, of course, bridging finance. And that's become the new trend of the day to really alleviate the pressures of small business.
And Toby, you're shaking, nodding your head,
yes,
I should say, because this opens up access to a line of credit that is far more affordable to the SME.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
If a small business goes to a bank or DFI or anybody else and gets a loan to fund its working capital, its cost of credit is going to be very, very high because its bank worthiness is not as great as, for example, its customers. So supply chain finance essentially allows a small business to piggyback on the creditworthiness of its customer and so get paid early, and allows then the, believe it or not, the customer, the big business, to extend its payment terms using its creditworthiness with the financial institution. So it's actually a win-win situation. And I think if we can get this adopted by more and more companies, it's going to have a radical effect on, again, unlocking working capital throughout the economy and seeding small businesses operations, and even actually paying them up front for certain of the value of the invoice. Because many, you know, if you're a company and you've got a million rand contract, financing that contract is very difficult. And if we can use supply chain finance to seed that contract, maybe 50% up front, based upon the trust relationship that exists between that customer and that supplier, then it totally speeds up the payment process and makes everybody happier.
Well, if ever there was a bill that warranted a bit of bipartisan support in our parliament, I think this is it. Toby, we'll be following its route with eagle eyes here on Classic Business, and let's hope we can rally around the SMEs in our ecosystem to ensure we give them every chance of success. That was Toby Chance, the DA Shadow Minister for Small Business Development, and Mike Anderson, the founder and CEO of the National Small Business Chamber, talking about the prompt payment code and ensuring we pay suppliers within the contractually stipulated time. On the panel, brought to you by Yellow Pages. And remember, Yellow Pages has a range of digital marketing solutions to help you grow your business. Yellow Pages. Don't search, find.
Michael Avery with Classic Business on Classic 102.7.